Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, viewed to be the best.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Hey, Dog Nation, I'm Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. Let me go ahead and get, I guess, the elephant out of the room, out of the way. Get the elephant in the room out of the way here to begin our program. If you're watching on video, you can see that I'm not in our Dog Nation World Headquarters studios. If you're listening radio podcast, you may notice a little bit of a difference in terms of what you hear today. But for the most part, we're going to try to deliver the same show that we always do with a couple slight differences. I'm, of course, completely 100% healthy. But, you know, sometimes, listen, have an abundance of caution. You want to make sure that you keep everybody else as healthy and safe as you can. So we want to sort of set the right tone here in our program today. So for a couple of days, I'm going to hang out and enjoy the beautiful holiday season here at my home. And so I hope all of you are kind of doing all the same thing, coming off a great Thanksgiving weekend and what I thought was a really fun game for Georgia on Saturday against South Carolina. In fact, let me begin today's program by starting right there. A lot of you who are regular listeners and viewers to what we do here know that for a few weeks now, and really for me, it's actually extended longer than that, but I have been just a little bit disappointed, many of you feel the same way, that Georgia is just not at the national elite level. They are not a true national championship contender this year. Some games against Florida and Alabama have proven that, but other moments and other games have seemingly kind of indicated that too. And yes, if things could have been a little bit different here, a little bit different there, the results could have been far different, maybe. But for the most part, I think we've all had to come to grips with the fact that the end of season goals that Georgia's had for itself this year, they're just not going to be able to achieve them. And if you go back and look at some of the stuff that happened in 2019, maybe that was a foreshadowing that Georgia was just kind of starting to slip from that perch just a bit. The SEC championship game against Alabama is a data point that maybe suggests that. We've all, over the course of the last couple of weeks, been forced to come to grips with that, to wrestle with that. All of this kind of came to a head when Georgia lost to Florida a couple of weeks ago. So that's kind of where we've been. And, you know, everybody's kind of had their own way of kind of dealing with that. And, you know, their opinions may vary on, you know, kind of how Georgia got there, but that's kind of where it has been. However, with all of that said, I think what you saw on Saturday, coupled with a little bit of what happened against Mississippi State the week before, I think that you can start to get a sense that maybe Georgia's starting to round the curve here a little bit, that maybe Georgia's starting to come around the bend as a team that is improving in the area that it needs the most improvement, and that is on the offensive side of the ball. And the big hire that was made at the start of the season to bring Todd Monken here as offensive coordinator, we may be seeing some evidence that that investment that Georgia has made in Monken is starting to pay off. And I'm going to go through a couple of the reasons why here over the course of the next couple of minutes. And obviously, the focal point for so many Georgia fans over the last few months has really been the quarterback position. And it's almost obscured to a degree the impact that Monken's arrival and the transformation that I believe that he's trying to undertake at Georgia. I think some of the quarterback talk kind of obscures a little bit about what's going on with Monken. And what you see here as Georgia gets into the late stage of the season, and yes, a lot of this probably is to a degree opponent driven, I won't deny that. But what you see is an example of the Georgia offense before the season is done, starting to show some signs that it might be getting better. It did it with the throw game a lot against Mississippi State. Obviously, you'll remember JT Daniels exceeded 400 yards passing in that game and threw for four touchdowns. And then this past Saturday, Georgia did it a lot with the running game. In fact, James Cook, Zamir White became the first tandem of Georgia running backs to both score multiple touchdowns in a game since Sony Michel and Nick Chubb did that way back in the Rose Bowl on January 1st of 2018. This was a day in which Georgia was ripping off huge rushing yards against South Carolina, 9 yards per clip in the first half, nearly 8 yards per clip by the time the game is done. And when the game was concluded, Kirby Smart talked a little bit about the success that UGA had in the running game, acknowledging that some of this was obviously because of the opponent. Here's what Kirby Smart said about that.
Let's be honest. A lot of it has to do with the other team and what they do. So we didn't call a lot of different runs. We didn't go out and reinvent the wheel to run the ball. We played a team that had three or four guys out. You know, they had some COVID issues, a couple other injuries that probably hurt their depth. They're a very beat up football team, and they're probably just not as stout as Mississippi State is up front. But with that said, our guys came out from the very beginning. They knew that South Carolina had some guys out. They didn't play down to that level. They played physical. They knocked people off the ball, and they ran the ball. And I thought that our O-line second effort and our back second effort was the difference in the game.
So Kirby acknowledging the success that the running game had Saturday against South Carolina. And when I praise Georgia for what it did against the Gamecocks, I do realize what some of you are going to say in response to that. You're going to say, yeah, but BA, you're the one that's been telling us that Georgia's got to upgrade that passing attack. And if Georgia wants to win these games against the biggest and best foes that it faces, the throwing game's got to be a big component of that. And that's still true. And I would say that over the course of the last couple of weeks, if you look at the JT Daniels era as Georgia's starting quarterback in totality, I think what you see an example of is Georgia kind of getting better in both regards. Because Georgia threw the football as well as it did against Mississippi State, all of a sudden the way that a team like South Carolina defends Georgia has to be different, and that opens up those opportunities for the run. Now, some of you in response to that are going to say, yeah, but BA, even though Georgia was running for 9 yards per carry in the first half, I still didn't want them to do that. I've already seen Georgia run the ball before. I don't want to see them do that. I want to see them throw the ball, even though Georgia's having, you know, essentially an unprecedented level of success, at least in SEC play, when it comes to throwing the football, or I should say when it comes to running the football. I want to see Georgia stop doing that. I want to start seeing Georgia throw the ball instead. And frankly, I just think that's a misunderstanding of the way that football works. I mean, if you look at Georgia's average yards per rush on Saturday, there are only a few teams in the country that actually average more yards per play when they're throwing the ball than Georgia got when it was rushing the ball against South Carolina on Saturday. And yes, I'm not going to, you know, brag on it too much because it does come because of a beat up opponent and everything else. I completely get all of that. But there is not a team in the country that, if they were having as much success as Georgia was on Saturday, would choose to go away from that and start doing something different than it did against the Gamecocks, because no one's going to turn down, you know, that opportunity for that kind of success. And then some people are going to say, well, what about late in the fourth quarter when Georgia, you know, seemingly took its foot off the gas here a little bit and coasted, took a knee at the end of the game, as opposed to, you know, what some people wanted to see was start throwing the ball a whole lot more there and turn what was a 45-16 game into a 60-plus explosion or something along those lines. And, you know, I kind of did a little bit of research on that. I went back and looked at Alabama the other day. You know, Alabama beat Kentucky 63-3, and that's a huge blowout number, and that's the kind of thing that some Georgia fans seemingly wanted to see against, you know, South Carolina this past Saturday. So I went back and looked. Exactly how was it that Alabama got that done? And if you go back and look at like the three final scoring drives for Alabama that day against Kentucky, I think they only threw the ball like once. The last two drives were exclusively, you know, running back led, all carries, and you know, it's backup running back kind of stuff that did that. So even Alabama the other day when it scored 60 plus is not throwing the ball on every single down near the end of the game, which is what some people seemingly wanted, you know, Georgia to do against South Carolina. I do think it's a little bit unusual that by and large, Georgia fans were happier after the Mississippi State game than they were after the South Carolina game. But comparatively speaking, the South Carolina game was a much better day for the Georgia offense overall. Yes, they threw it a little bit less, but in terms of the overall success rate for the offense, it was better against South Carolina than it was against Mississippi State. Not that the offense performance was necessarily bad against the Bulldogs last week. It was just an improvement against South Carolina. Look, you got to look at, you know, how this, you know, compares to recent Georgia performances as well. This is what? The first time that Georgia has scored 30 or more points in back-to-back games versus SEC foes since October of last year, when it started week one against Vanderbilt, then a few weeks later exploded for 40-plus against Tennessee. That game included a defensive score, though. But you have to go back to October of last year to find a time that Georgia has scored 30 or more points in two consecutive games versus SEC foes. This is also the most that Georgia has blown out a team since it beat Florida in the cocktail party back in 2017. It's been a long time since Georgia's dominated any SEC team to the degree that it dominated South Carolina on Saturday. And as I said before, I give some of the credit to Todd Monken, the new Georgia offensive coordinator, who seems to be coming to his own, seems to be rounding into form at really just about the right time as Georgia fans can start to think about what the upcoming season might provide for Georgia, and showing some data points here at the end of this season that certainly provides some evidence of that. In fact, on the subject of Todd Monken, what he's doing for Georgia, Georgia coach Kirby Smart tossed some compliments his way after the game. This is what Kirby had to say.
I'm think he's a really good play caller. He's really does a good job being aggressive. I think he's been playing with a partial deck some of the games because of the injuries and the youth. And we knew that. Like, we knew there was going to be youth and that we were going to invest in that youth and that it was going to grow and get better. You know, I think that we know we've got some really good young players on offense that have a lot of potential, that we've got to try to maximize that potential and keep getting them better. But I like the rhythm of things and certainly think that the players hearing the plays week 7, week 8, week 9 are a lot better off than they were week 1, 2, and 3.
Let me give you something to think about here for a moment. If you're Brent Venables, the Clemson defensive coordinator, and you know that you're going to have to face some version of this Georgia offense to start the 2021 season, which of the two films do you think cause him more concern, to the extent that any of this causes him a concern right now? Which of these two films do you think cause him more concern? What Georgia put on display against Mississippi State or what Georgia put on display against South Carolina? I would suggest that if you're a top-flight defensive coordinator looking to stop Georgia, what you saw versus the Gamecocks, as beat up as they are, would cause you more concern than what you saw against Mississippi State, even though there was less passing in the game Saturday than there was against Mississippi State. And I'll give you one more point to kind of back this point up. I thought Cole Kubelik, the SEC network analyst, had an interesting tweet this weekend looking at Alabama, another demolishing victory for them against Auburn. This is what Kubelik tweeted about Alabama. I think this is interesting. I'm not going to show you this on the screen. I'm just going to read it. He says, the more I watch Alabama offense, there are two major separators for them. In other words, things that make them better than everybody else. He says, it's a true play-action RPO mix. You just don't get many teams that give the clean play-action looks as well as Alabama does, especially with the real run-pass option threat. They could absolutely also bludgeon you between the tackles. I think that Cole's right about that. What I believe right now makes Alabama a much better team than Florida, and Alabama really a much better team than virtually every team in America at the moment, is the fact that while Mac Jones is putting up potential Heisman-type numbers as the Crimson Tide quarterback, this is still a team that has Najee Harris. This is still a team that runs well between the tackles and uses that in play action and run pass option and all the stuff that you can kind of do off of that. They have the big throw game component that Georgia's working to build up, and they also have the elite running component, which programs like Florida and right now even Ohio State doesn't really seem to have. That is a separator for Alabama. And obviously, as Georgia builds up its passing attack to hopefully resemble some of what Alabama's doing, the presence of a running game to go along with that can also be potentially a separator for UGA as well. Listen, I don't want to oversell this. I think the Georgia offense is still a long way away from where it needs to be. But the last 2 weeks for me are an indication the process of getting better might have started. Some of you have asked, can this Georgia offense be better under Todd Monken? I think it's now time for some of you to take yes for an answer. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We are live from my house today and brought to you by our friends at Pella Window and Door of Georgia. Of course, all the great things that you've come to expect from our program, you'll still get that. We'll have John Stinchcomb joining us through the magic of video teleconference here in just a couple of minutes. A lot more involving the Georgia game on Saturday against South Carolina. We'll cover all of that, the Dwan Mathis rumors. We'll get to those before we're done with the show today here as well. And a huge thanks to our friends at Pella for making all this possible. You know, I'm sitting here in my home today. It's very cold outside, but I'm toasty and warm on the inside because of the fact that I've got energy-efficient windows and doors. And if you don't have those, my friends at Pella can change that for you. They can get you set up to keep the energy on the inside where it's supposed to be. You don't want what's inside to get outside this time of year around your home, and Pella Window and Door of Georgia can prevent that from happening. They can also make it look better on the outside as well. Curb appeal is always a value add for homeowners, and all homeowners understand that. Let me also tell you about great savings right now with our friends at Pella Window and Door of Georgia. Through January 7th, you can get 50% off qualifying installations or no payments, no interest for 18 months. Great savings there. A couple different ways for you to get in touch. PellaBranch.com, that's the website, PellaBranch.com, or give them a call in their Dunwoody showroom at 404-445-2979. That's 404-445-2979. Pella Window and Door of Georgia is viewed to be the best. All right, we're going to get John Stinchcomb here in just a little bit. Before we do that, let's go around the doghouse. Assisted today by our friends at AAA. I was on the road this weekend. Always gives me peace of mind to know that I've got that AAA coverage protecting me while I'm on the road, assisting me if I have some sort of breakdown or anything like that. And of course, AAA can do the same thing for you. And for our Around the Doghouse here today, I want to focus on kind of an interesting tweet from Georgia quarterback JT Daniels last night. You'll see this on your screen. More to come, he says. A lot of folks wondered, does that mean that Maybe JT Daniels says he's coming back for the upcoming season. There had been a little bit of draft scuttlebutt with Daniels. I don't put a lot of attention on early mock drafts and things like that. Those are notoriously wrong. But a lot of folks wondered, what would Daniels' status be for next season, given the fact that he is draft eligible right now. This tweet has been taken by many to mean, hey, maybe this means that Daniels is coming back for next season. I certainly hope that's the case. I like what I saw from Daniels on Saturday. I think that it was a solid performance, maybe not quite as spectacular as what he did against Mississippi State this past week. But in totality now, as I said before, you're seeing an offense week over week for Georgia that's getting better, and some moments for Daniels that were really strong too, and probably just an eyelash away a couple of times from a couple of plays that could have been even bigger and better than that. I thought it was a nice day for JT Daniels. And boy, the thought of him now being an entrenched starter, coming back for next season with a young five-star like Brock Vandegrift waiting in the wings. Easy to get a smile on your face about that if you're a UGA fan. This is Kirby Smart from after the game against South Carolina talking about what he had seen from his starter, Daniels.
But he did a good job. He took the things the defense gave to him. He made some good throws. He understands protections. He knows what covers they're in. He did what we asked him to do. I thought the one ball to Jermaine on the wheel down our sideline was the one I wish he could have back. And he underthrew it a little bit, and Jermaine may have still been able to catch it. But I thought he played well. He understands what we're trying to do, and he did a good job handling the offense.
Yeah, so listen, I thought it was a good day for Daniels. I thought it was a good day. Even if the stats weren't quite what they were a week ago, this is a guy that's kind of settling into the role as Georgia's starting quarterback, maybe shaking a little bit of the rust off, a couple moments where maybe he held the ball a little too long, a couple of moments, and I know Kirby Smart, kind of mentioned this, where he had a chance to take a big, deep shot and maybe just missed out on that. But listen, there's no doubt that Georgia seems to be in good hands at the quarterback spot right now. You'll take that as good news. And no doubt this Georgia offense at the moment is getting better also. So all of this would seem to be an arrow pointed up, even if it's just slightly, and even if it's a lot of this is opponent generated, because Georgia's unfortunately playing a stretch of very bad teams at the moment. Certainly it's nice to see better days for the Georgia offense, and nice to see JT Daniels being a part of that. It's Around the Doghouse. It's assisted today by our friends at AAA. I mentioned before the legendary roadside assistance for which AAA is famous. They can also save you big bucks as well when you sign up to become a member. One of the ways in which they do that is the AAA Savings Hack Pack. It's combinations of benefits. It's worth more than $1,000 and includes free career assistance, identity theft protection, up to 85% off prescriptions, and, of course, discounts on food and essentials and everything else that you need while you're on the road. It's part of every AAA membership. If you want to find out more about this, please check them out online. It's AAA.com/GoSavings. That's AAA.com/GoSavings. All right, it's a very busy edition of Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia for us. Even on a day in which I'm not in our Dog Nation World Headquarters studios, show must go on. We got a lot of fun. We're going to get into the Dwan Mathis stuff before we're done here today. The reports that Mathis may have left the team. Mike Griffith had his own report on that. Kirby Smart spoke about that after the game on Saturday. So we'll cover all of that with you before we're done. But for now, here on our program, let's also get ready to talk to the great former UGA All-American and a good friend of ours. It's John Stinchcomb here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Palo Window and Door of Georgia. John, can you hear me? Are you ready to go here today?
Ready to rock, brother.
Oh, that's great to know. Well, that's good. No, yeah, we won't do any kind of pomp and circumstance. No sound effects for you here today. But it is our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update nonetheless. Let me bring you in the conversation that we were just having. I'm curious of your thoughts, although I think I have an idea of where you're going to go on this. I was really happy with what I saw from Georgia on Saturday. It was a game that felt like UGA games of the past. But, John, as I try to explain to our audience, it's actually been a while since Georgia has played as well as it did on Saturday, even though some of what you saw conjured up memories that you might have had from Kirby Smart games past. You really have to go pretty deep into like the 2018 era, 2017, to find Georgia thoroughly dominating an SEC opponent the way that it did on Saturday. And for me, in concert with what Georgia also did the week before in the passing game against Mississippi State, I think you can now say, after a couple of weeks here, this Todd Monken offense starting to grow some roots in Athens. And this is a team offensively that's better than it was earlier in the season. And I take that as good news. And frankly, I was actually pretty entertained by what I saw on Saturday. How did you feel about it?
I enjoyed every second of it. And I know, a big factor was the opponent. I mean, South Carolina, their roster has been pilfered through by a number of different circumstances that affects it. But I want to focus on Georgia. And what I saw was a team that put together a solid 60-minute performance that's been something that we haven't been able to enjoy for quite some time. So to see the way that they performed, went out there, the way they ran the ball, man, what a welcomed compliment. Having last week, you see a quarterback that's capable, and now you've combined that with a running attack, which is something that, man, I enjoy seeing it. You see an offensive line leaning on folks and the holes that were created. James Cook had his best performance and didn't do it in just one way. I mean, he had some nice runs up the middle, and he wasn't alone in that. So a great performance from the Dogs all the way around.
So what would you say in response to those who might say, well, we have seen Georgia run the ball in the past. We know they're capable of doing that against this overmatched opponent on Saturday. I want to see them take the throw game out for a spin. I want to see them, you know, allow JT Daniels to develop more chemistry with the wide receivers, simply choosing to call more passing plays. What would you say in response to those who say, even though Saturday was a very successful day for the Georgia offense overall, the recipe by which it happened is not the kind of thing that Georgia should be doing in preparation for the bigger and better games it's going to play down the line?
I disagree. I mean, for the game plan against South Carolina, I think they executed exactly what was needed. You had a defensive front that was struggling. You didn't have many of the key pieces that South Carolina normally does up front. Why would you do something other than what Georgia did on Saturday, which is consistently and constantly move the ball effectively? What a great game plan. You went in there and you executed against the opponent's weakness. That's what I want to see. Now, is that going to work every week? No, probably not. But what we saw in the previous week and then this Saturday is ability to attack defenses through the air and in the rushing attack. That gives you more opportunities. That gives you exactly what we're hoping for in the scenarios down the road where you're going to not be able to rely on just one, but you have in your arsenal the ability to execute in both.
I looked it up. There are only 14 teams in the country this year who are averaging more yards per pass than Georgia averaged per run in the first half on Saturday against South Carolina. Think about this for a moment. So we think of the passing game as naturally more explosive than the running game, but most teams in America can't even aspire in their passing game to be as explosive as Georgia was with its running game on Saturday. It really was unique in a 2020 situation that, I mean, it would frankly be a fireable offense for a coach to stop doing something that was working to the tune of nine yards per attempt. I just think it's as simple as that.
It also speaks to the way offenses have changed, where they don't rely on runs as much as they do quick passes that don't go for a lot of yards. It's just various ways of getting the balls to the perimeter without having to run the ball. So I think, is there anything more frustrating as a defense of saying, we can't line up and stop what they're doing? I mean, no. There really isn't. And I think what Georgia did on Saturday was just force their will on a defense that had no answers and couldn't stop them. So when you're creating big plays in a run game and you know that's the way you're being attacked and you can't do anything about it, it's humiliating and debilitating. And I loved every second of it. So it was good stuff.
I also think that if you go back and look at what Georgia did in 2019, where there was a huge regression for the running game. Georgia did not run the ball nearly as effectively by almost any metric in 2019 compared to the way it did in 2018. And the way that I've kind of described this, probably overly simplistic, but nonetheless, I do believe there are nuggets of truth in this, that the word got out on Georgia that they just simply were not going to throw it over top of you. You know, they were not going to punish you for stacking the line of scrimmage, and therefore defenses crept up and crept up and crept up and crept up. Well, I think what you saw against Mississippi State was, hey, if you try to play us the way that Mississippi State played Georgia, if you try to do that, then Georgia now has the capabilities to punish you for doing that. So even though a lot of what happened against South Carolina was probably opponent driven, there were a couple of key moments in the game, and a lot of these highlights have been shown on social media, where very good Georgia starters on the offensive line are just totally bludgeoning South Carolina walk-ons. I mean, you can really kind of isolate and identify some of the real bully moments for Georgia in this game on Saturday. But even apart from that, I think you see the remnants already against South Carolina of the fact that you know, now Georgia's putting you into a choice. Now Georgia's kind of putting you into the situation of, do you want to try to stop this? Do you want to try to stop that? I don't know that opposing defensive coordinators, John, have had many moments in you know, the last year or two where they've had to face a tough choice about stopping the Georgia offense. That word conflict that offensive coordinators love to use now, all of a sudden Georgia has created a conflict for opposing defenses, and I do think you're going to see more of that maybe against Vanderbilt, Missouri, you know, this season. I think there's a chance that extends into next season. All of a sudden, Georgia's under Todd Monken is maybe just a little more capable of putting opposing defenses into conflict.
And I think we've tried to do it. I mean, that's been his approach since day one, I feel like, is he sprinkled in a number of shot plays. We just weren't able to execute. I mean, I think back to some of the early games, it wasn't like the play calls weren't trying to challenge the defense and trying to take the top off the defense to get those safeties back out of the box. We just weren't able to hit them. And now I feel like JT Daniels kind of answers that question mark for us, that if we're going to call those plays to challenge the defense and exploit what they're doing, which is jam the box and say, try to throw it over the top. Well, now we can. I mean, now – We've had the, at least this year, you've had the wide receivers and Burton that has stepped up, and Kiaris Jackson, who's had a banner year on an individual level, in addition to George Pickens, who finally, I mean, these past 2 weeks, we see more George Pickens than we have the first five or six combined. So you're starting to put those pieces in place, and really it circles around the quarterback spot where JT Daniels gives us that opportunity to legitimize those plays that I think were being called from the jump, but we just weren't able to hit them.
Yeah, I think it's exactly right. By the way, it's our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update with John Stinchcomb. I'm smiling because one of my favorite promotions that we're a part of each and every year with Dog Nation is now back as Marlowe's Tavern gets ready for the holiday season. I think this is a great value and a great way for you to have some fun with some of the people in your life. That if you're looking for that tough to buy for person on your holiday gift list, keep Marlowe's Tavern in mind. When you get a $50 Marlowe's Tavern gift card to give away to somebody here this holiday season, as a special thank you, Marlowe's going to give you a complimentary bottle of Michelle Brewed Sparkling Wine. I think it's a really cool thing that they do. But here's what I love even more than that. If you get a $100 Marlowe's Tavern gift card to give away to one of your friends or family members this holiday season, not only is Marlowe's going to give you the Michelle Brewed Sparkling Wine, but they're also going to give you a bonus $20 gift card as well. Now, listen, far be it from me to tell you how to live your life, but here's what I would do. I'd get the $100 gift card. I'd give that to somebody from Marlowe's Tavern. I'd enjoy the Michelle Brewed Sparkling Wine. Enjoy that with whoever you want to. But take that bonus $20 gift card, put that thing right in your pocket, and give yourself something. Treat yourself. They like to say, treat yourself. Treat yourself here this holiday season. As Eddie would say, something for yourself real nice. Get yourself something this holiday season. Nice. The $20 Marlowe's Tavern gift card is certainly an example of that. It's great to have Marlowe's Tavern here as part of our Insider Update with John Stinchcomb here today. Other side of the ball for a moment, John. So, you know, South Carolina moved it a little bit, scored, you know, only a couple of points. Some missed tackles here in this game. It was nice to see Tyson Campbell get his first career interception. Jalen Carter has the look of a real, you know, tiger for Georgia there on that defensive line. I guess overall, let me not put words in your mouth. What'd you think of what Georgia did defensively Saturday?
Yeah, I think it's improvement. I think golly, they had a great game, but at the end of the day, I think we all realize that it's not the elite group that we thought it could be, and a lot has to do with the attrition that the personnel has taken. I mean, you don't have Richard LeCount on the back end or Jordan Davis in the front line, but you see players that are starting to come into their own, and you have to be excited about Jalen Carter and You're getting a lot of reps for some of these true freshmen and redshirt freshmen across that front. But it's just not – I mean, it's not elite like we thought it possibly could have been. It was a great performance, and that's a good thing. But at the end of the day, it's not nearly what we thought it could be this year.
Can I give you a statement that you're probably not going to like? And I'm not trying to sugarcoat things too much. If anything, I think I'm being appropriately blunt. I'm just glad it's not worse than it is. I mean, we've got opt-outs all over the place in college football. And a lot of these guys in this Georgia defense, upperclassmen, whatnot, have NFL futures. You know, Georgia, from a goal standpoint, doesn't have a lot left to play for. The hope is that players want to play for Pride. But not everybody necessarily wants to do that. I mean, you know, let's face it, when you get a choice of play for Pride now or sit out, play for money later, the sit out and play for money later seems to be winning out at the moment. South Carolina, LSU, lots of examples where players have kind of left. I do think, even if the level of focus might not be quite what it once was, and, you know, the overall, you know, statistical dominance is certainly not what we expected, you know, Jordan Davis seems to be working his way back, trying to play again, which I think is, admirable. Richard LeCount, who, you know, it may be a little bit more of a long shot that he actually does play again. I mean, he was in Columbia on Saturday, at least trying to support the team. He's kind of hanging around. This group is still holding itself together. And even they're not quite going out there and just dominating the way that maybe they were earlier in the season, or maybe we thought they would through the totality of this year. They are kind of holding it all together here for the moment. And Georgia is not having the embarrassing conclusion right now to a season that some of the other SEC teams seem to either be having or on the verge of having. I'm not trying to tell you they deserve a participation trophy. That's not what I'm saying. But I guess in a way, I'm kind of glad it's not worse than it is.
Yes. And I agree, because I find it borderline disgusting, candidly. I don't like the direction that's taken, that players play college football solely as this stepping stone. And once they feel like, or somebody in their ear has chirped in it and said, you know, you've done enough, you can move on. I think it demeans or devalues what college football has represented for so many, and kind of starts to erode the foundation that we all have built. I mean, I feel like we've been a part of something that's created this massive machine that we all get to enjoy and benefit from. And when players make the selfish choice, I mean, it is a selfish choice where you're saying, I give up on my team, I give up on my school because it's best for my self-interest. There's a few players where that might make sense, but ultimately, I find it disgusting, and I'm grateful that Georgia doesn't or isn't currently, I think we probably have some in the past, have to deal with it. I much prefer and can rally behind guys that were saying, I love the game of football. I love being able to play the game of football for the University of Georgia. You know, I continue to point back to years past where Nick Chubb, Sony Michel, Lorenzo Carter, and Davin Bellamy made that decision to say, it's worth it to me. I have set goals at this level that we haven't reached yet that I want to be a part of. I made a commitment to the brothers that I play next to. Otherwise, that big team, little me mentality and those T-shirts that you write them on, you should set fire to them because you don't believe in it. It is the team is here for me and my personal endeavors.
Yeah. One of the phrases that I use a lot, John, is how you do anything is how you do everything. That you can't flip the switch off at the end of this season and then magically with some holdover players, some new players, just flip it back on to start the 2021 season. That life doesn't work out quite as cleanly as that. Now, just beating up on teams like South Carolina alone is not enough to guarantee success in 2021. But certainly to maintain a level of focus makes that easier. And for right now, I think for the most part, Georgia is doing that. They didn't play great against Mississippi State. That's kind of a one-off weird type of offense. And, you know, ultimately, you know, that they won the game. They gave up a little bit to Luke Doty and the Carolina running back on Saturday. But the truth is, that's a pretty good tandem of skill position players. They may do some stuff in this league a little bit next year. For the most part, I think that Georgia is holding it together well. I think they are having an admirable conclusion to this season, as long as it continues that way. And I do think they are putting together, at least right now, we'll see what happens against Vanderbilt and presumably Missouri to close out the regular season. But I think that Georgia right now is putting together a foundation that makes success next season possible, maybe even slightly more probable. Doesn't guarantee it, but the job of winning the big games in 2021, I do think is made easier by the fact that Georgia is not – it's not embarrassing itself right now to conclude this season. I think that's at least something.
Yeah, and I continue to believe that the process is just as important as the destiny. You know, the journey is there's value in it, and we're on it. It's not this year, but you build programs this way. We've discussed it in the past. Florida, past few years, hasn't been competing for national championships. It doesn't mean they threw their seasons away and said, well, we'll just wait until we have all the pieces in place. You build. You continue to develop as players and as a team. You create identity. And this season's not over. You still have to finish what you started. I think there's – golly, I think back to Coach Rick when he first came. It was finish the drill. Finish the drill. We put it on T-shirts, and man, he beat it into our brains that that's what we were going to be about. And there's almost a mentality that has infected our sport that you don't have to do that. You just do enough that is self-serving, and then you can bail on it and move on to what's next. And I think it's insidious, and I think it erodes the value and quality of our game. So for those that are still competing this year, there's a lot of young players that are out there that there's still a heck of a lot left to play for on a personal level, but certainly as a team.
John, it's great to
keep asking questions. BA, I got to get my computer charger or else you're going to lose me.
No worries. We're all good. Thanks for being here, part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update today.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
And there's a lot to get to from the SEC. I want to do some of this. Obviously, Georgia's opponent for this upcoming Saturday is Vanderbilt for the second consecutive week. It now looks like it is true that Georgia will be facing an interim coach as Vanderbilt fired Derrick Mason yesterday. Mason obviously faces a tough task at Vanderbilt. This is not a program that's all in on athletics, all in on football. They've demonstrated that over and over again. I think Mason's probably a pretty good coach. I think that Vanderbilt's a really tough job. I guess now what Mason's going to need to try to decide is, does he want to be a head coach again somewhere else? I'm sure he probably does. Or for now, is he satisfied being what I kind of think of as the kingmaker defensive coordinator, the kind of guy that can go somewhere and as a DC propel a team to a national championship type level? You know, that's what some people treated Will Muschamp as, but frankly, I'm not quite so sure as a defensive coordinator that Muschamp is as valuable as Derrick Mason. And I say that as someone who really likes, you know, Will Muschamp as a coaching mind, at least for the most part. I like Muschamp as a coaching mind. But if you told me, you know, program X could hire a defensive coordinator, I think that Mason would be the more quality hire there for now than Muschamp. Go back and look at some of the stuff that Derrick Mason did defensively at Stanford as a part of building up that program, turning it into, you know, a program that was competing at the higher level of play there in the Pac-12. Mason was really responsible for a lot of that defensively. I don't know what the job prospects are for Mason again as a head coach, at least for right now. But if he chooses to be a defensive coordinator again, then I would think that he'd be one of the most attractive hires that anyone can make on the market. That's probably worth watching. I thought it was kind of interesting that Jordan Rogers, the former Vanderbilt quarterback who's now an SEC Network analyst, has suggested that the coach that he would look at for this job is current Arkansas defensive coordinator, former Missouri head coach Barry Odom. It seems to make some sense to me. I'm sure that Vanderbilt will consider a lot of names, but that seems to make some sense. First of all, Odom has done a great job of the Arkansas defense this year, and there were a lot of folks who thought maybe he was not handled particularly well on the way out the door there in Missouri. I'm sure if you polled, you know, coaches like Kirby Smart in the SEC East and said, would you want Vanderbilt to hire Barry Odom. I'm sure Kirby Smart in a perfect world would say, no, I would probably prefer Vanderbilt hire somebody else because, you know, Odom's not spectacular. Vanderbilt's not going to win very much no matter who its coach is. But if you bring in a guy like Odom, you know they're going to play tough defensively. You know he's going to get the most out of his talent. And, you know, that just makes that game a little bit tougher than it otherwise would be if Vanderbilt kind of swung for the fences with a young up-and-coming guy who might just not be able to handle the unique challenges that come with being there at the Commodore. So no Derek Mason when Vandy comes to Georgia on Saturday. By the way, that game announced yesterday as a 4 p.m. start. So the home finale for the Dogs next week will be at 4 p.m. That means moving into night before the game is done, so you get to see the lineup one more time there. Alabama crushed Auburn in the Iron Bowl. And, you know, when you're like me and you kind of spout hot takes for a living, you're going to have a lot of, you know, ones that turn out to be right, a lot of ones that turn out to be wrong. If you want to go back over the course of the last couple of years, one of the things that I've probably been most wrong about, pains me to admit this, but it's true, is that I really thought that Alabama was on its way down. And obviously the way in which they have rebounded as a program, handled coronavirus as well as anybody has, you know, Nick Saban missed the game on Saturday, but for the most part, Alabama has been in good shape with all of this. And really finding a new gear as a program, especially, you know, the transition away from Tua Tagovailoa. You know, you lose Jerry Jeudy, you lose Henry Ruggs, big pieces off that offense, and Mac Jones has kind of just sort of settled in and been spectacular. And it would really be amazing when you think about what Alabama has had at quarterback, all the hype that Jalen Hurts, you know, once got, all the hype that Tua Tagovailoa once got. What about the guy that was sitting behind all those guys, both those guys, as a third-string quarterback a couple of years ago? Wouldn't it be ironic, I think that's the right use of that word, if it's actually Jones who ends up winning the Heisman Trophy when all the attention at one point in time went to the other two quarterbacks in the roster? Alabama's just really humming along right now. On the Auburn side of this, interesting to think that, you know, they've won some rivalry games, right? They beat Georgia a couple of years ago. But all of that has happened at Jordan-Hare Stadium. Malzahn is now winless on the road against Alabama, winless on the road against Georgia, and winless on the road against LSU. They haven't been LSU on the road since 1999. It's just really amazing how little success that Malzahn seems to find away from Jordan-Hare Stadium. If you want to be the kind of coach that's more than just good every now and then, once every few years, the kind of coach that has some permanence, the ability to compete year over year, you do have to win on the road eventually. And for whatever reason, Auburn, very good at home, but they can't win the big games away from Jordan-Hare Stadium. It is a very, very unusual ratio of home versus road splits for Auburn when it comes to that. There are some South Carolina coaching rumors out there at the moment. It looks like Phil Kornblut, who has covered South Carolina for a long time and really covered both South Carolina and Clemson for a while, he is saying that he's hearing that Shane Beamer, the former Georgia assistant that went to Oklahoma, might be in line for the South Carolina job. We kind of half-kiddingly, half-seriously said the other day that the Jeff Munkin rumor that kind of popped out might have been kind of a smokescreen by South Carolina, because even though Munkin is – Jeff Munkin here – is a pretty good coach, you know, that's not the kind of thing, triple option, service academy, that South Carolina fans are going to really want. We thought, well, maybe the Munkin rumor was a smokescreen to make South Carolina fans feel better, but the coach that's eventually hired, and Shane Beamer was one of the guys that we had in mind when we were talking about that. I believe we said that. So I don't know that Beamer's going to get this job, but interesting to hear now that that's kind of where the rumor mill is going. Easy to think that Billy Napier, the Louisiana coach, might feel he's in line for a better job. Certainly Hugh Freeze, you know, I've kind of wondered how many better jobs in South Carolina that he can get right now. The fact that he's willing to kind of let the South Carolina job pass, and if that's indeed what's happening here, would seem to be an indication that he feels like he might be able to get a better job. And those kind of interesting rumors that say, well, what about Hugh Freeze eventually taking over for Jeremy Pruitt of Tennessee? Obviously, Pruitt's on a little bit of a hotter seat there in Knoxville after five straight losses for the Vols. So there's going to be a lot of these twists and turns of the coaching rumor mill carousel coming up in the weeks ahead, and we will be all over that. A couple of other notes here. Texas A&M beat LSU on Saturday. 27 was the final. A lot of people said it wasn't impressive enough for A&M against kind of a depleted LSU team that doesn't have a lot to play for. And by the way, I should also say before we get to that, speaking of depleted LSU, Terrace Marshall, the five-star wide receiver, has opted out, former five-star. He will not play against Alabama this Saturday, and he's now declared for the NFL draft. So that's another big-time player for LSU that is now gone. as Terrace Marshall has opted out in the rest of the year, has declared for the NFL draft. So Ed Orgeron and LSU have had a hard time holding on to players. Another example of that with Marshall kind of moving on from the program. But the point that I was getting to is some people said, Texas A&M, they may be ranked number five, but they're not a real number five. And there's some chatter within the SEC of, is it now time for Florida to leapfrog over Texas A&M when it comes to those college football playoff rankings? Last week, the Aggies were ahead of the Gators. For me, I would still say it's appropriate to rank A&M ahead of Florida. I think the head-to-head win is supposed to matter there. I think for what some people would describe as a lack of style points for Texas A&M, the truth is Florida hasn't exactly been incredibly dominant the last couple of weeks for the full game against either Vanderbilt or Kentucky. You know, the final scores end up not looking so bad, but you know, the old game control metric, I don't know that Florida's necessarily had, you know, perfect game control the last couple of weeks. And frankly, I think that, you know, winning easily against LSU, something that Texas A&M for the most part did on Saturday, is still not as easy as some people think that it is. This is a team that for the most part, that Vegas still loves in LSU. And I'm not quite so sure I'm as down on Texas A&M for their win against LSU as some other folks seem to be. And by the way, I guess we'll conclude our SEC through by saying congratulations to Ole Miss on its Egg Bowl win against Mississippi State. There was some very funny trolling on social media after this game is over. I don't have these to show to you on screen, but if you'll check out the Ole Miss football account, the official athletics department account, they were really going after Mississippi State here pretty good. I'm always entertained by the Egg Bowl, and certainly an example of that going back to Saturday. We'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, let me also turn my attention fully back to UGA here for a moment. And Dogs 247 reported this, that Dwan Mathis is stepping away from the Georgia team and, barring a change of heart, was going to put his name in the transfer portal. Our buddy Mike Griffith from Dog Nation spoke to the family of Dwan Mathis. They would not confirm that report. Kirby Smart, after the game, also sharing what's going on here with Dwan Mathis' situation. Is he really gone? This is what Kirby Smart said after the game.
Yeah, Dwan and I have had several conversations. Dwan's been very communicative. He's handled things really well. The stuff that goes on with Dwan and our team and us is really a team-related deal, so I'm not really going to comment on it. But Dwan's handled everything with first class.
So Smart not confirming the news, but also not really denying it either. And listen, what I've said about this is, if Dwan Mathis is frustrated that he's not playing, wants to go somewhere that he is playing, I'd shake his hand. I'd wish him well on that. I think I can absolutely understand why everybody would want, you know, to play college football and, you know, would not want to sit on the bench. I would say that Georgia has given him some opportunities to do so. He was the starter at the beginning of the season, got a chance to come back in and play against Florida. It certainly seemed to my eyes at this moment that Mathis is just not quite ready for this level of competition. That doesn't mean that he one day won't be, but right now I get the impression that he's not quite ready. If he wants to go somewhere else where he can learn by playing, because Georgia's just not going to really give you a lot of on-the-job experience, that's not the way this program works, and, you know, nor is that the way that most programs at the elite high level of college football work. You know, if that's what Mathis wants to do, I'd shake his hand. I think he's a tremendous feel-good story. And frankly, much like other Georgia players who've left the program, I will continue to root for Dwan Mathis wherever he goes. So I got no bad words to say about Dwan Mathis. However, I do think it would be a mistake if Mathis has left the team now during the year. That would not be, for me, a particularly good look. And even though I don't fault him if he wants to move on, put his name in the transfer portal, I don't know that he gains anything by doing that now. And I think that certainly it speaks well of him if he were to finish out the season at Georgia, even if now he's probably not the number two quarterback. I'm assuming that Stetson Bennett's the number two quarterback for Georgia. At least that's the way that they warmed up on Saturday. If he's healthy, he's probably number two. But Mathis would serve himself well, I believe, to finish out the season at UGA. We will see if that is indeed what happens, or we'll see if Mathis has some sort of last-minute change of heart and decides to go the other direction. But the reports are out there. You can read about this at DogNation.com, and we'll see if Kirby Smart says anything more about this today. Thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. Have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow, everybody.